Welcome to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White. I'm Hardy White. Join me now over and over and over again as we cross each bridge together. Look down at the water and imagine. Look up at the wall and imagine together. That's what matters. We're together. Welcome. There's a time and a place for everything, except when there's no time and no place.
I ask the dishes, please.
I tell you, run a stand.
No time.
Are you going to go to where the party is?
No place. No time.
Attention! Attention!
What is it, Lou?
I have made a special treat for breakfast. Something a little out of the ordinary.
What?
Corn.
Cornflakes?
Corn.
Grits?
No grits. Raw corn. Here. Enjoy.
I can't eat this. I can't physically eat this.
Just because it isn't cooked.
This is popcorn.
No, popcorn is light and fluffy.
Oh, this is unpopped popcorn. It's all dried out.
Just splash some milk on it. It'll come back to life.
It doesn't work that way. You're an idiot.
No, I'm inventive. I like to take chances. So this one didn't work. So what? Mistakes are necessary to advance humanity intellectually. Also for survival.
I'm having oatmeal. Who wants some?
Me. Suit yourself. Also, I'm writing an opera called The Dinner Party You Are Now Attending. So, Hardy, are you doing that radio interview again?
Yeah, for the 200th time or something.
Will you ever get it right?
Who knows? No more right than the show.
How many hundreds of shows have you done?
You know there's only one show.
No, I mean outside of time.
Who knows? Lots.
It's weird to be able to do the same show over and over again, but still people only hear the one show.
That's time travel for you.
Well, I just want to get it right.
You should just do the one and move on. I'm just living the one life, unlike you guys.
So I live multiple lives as multiple people in multiple timelines. So what?
I don't know. I guess I just don't feel any need to get things right. Once through is enough for me.
Well, that's admirable.
It's lazy.
Lazy might come in handy. You don't know.
You don't know.
You don't know.
No, you don't know.
You don't know.
Stop it, both of you.
Doesn't it get boring living the same events over and over again?
No, because it's always different.
How so?
Well, you can walk over a bridge the same way every day, and it might be the same bridge, but every day you might see it from slightly different angles. The same forest is not the same if you aren't the same.
Welcome to What's All This? I'm Marshall Tidmarsh. Time travel. We've read about it in everything from H.G. Wells to Mark Twain. Seen Doctor Who on our televisions. We see it in the movies constantly. It has become a cliché, a tired narrative device, the stuff of second-rate science fiction. And yet, it continues to fascinate and stir our imaginations. Today, I speak with someone for whom it is not a tired cliché, but a way of life. Broadcaster and time traveler, Hardy White, welcome.
Thank you for having me again.
Again?
Never mind.
Hardy White, are you really the first and only time traveler?
In a way, I'm the only one not time traveling.
Well, perhaps we've made a mistake having you on our program.
Perhaps.
Please explain.
I guess the best way to start would be at the beginning, which is only the beginning because of a horrible mistake.
Go on.
I have, thanks. Picture it this way. Imagine that everything that ever was or will be is laid out all together in a picture. A picture of a city. A detailed map of everything.
Yes.
And you can move freely around this city any way you want. Let's say that that city has two rivers that intersect with an island in the middle, so that there are seven bridges. Let's call them days or seven eras or something. You can walk back and forth across them and go anywhere on the great map of everything.
Sounds wonderful.
Then let's say that you make a bet, as I did, that you can cross each bridge only once and in one direction and end up where you started.
Sounds interesting.
And barring that, because that might not be possible, can you make a path crossing each bridge or day only once and in one direction?
Can that be done?
Unfortunately, yes.
And you did that?
Well, I did, yes, but so did you. Because before I did that, there wasn't a difference. You, everyone, everything. There wasn't really a distinction, per se. And then I took the bet and crossed each day only once in one direction, and by doing that, created another universe in which only that was possible.
So no more Grand City.
Now all the areas of the map, those bridges, can be experienced only once and in one direction. And in so doing, we created grief and loss and memory and forgetting and time and all that stuff.
So how does one time travel?
I still remember the city somehow. Not completely, but we are still there in another universe. It exists. We're just stuck on this strange path.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
You never do.
I beg your pardon?
Oh, also, I have a time machine.
Now you're making sense.
Let's just say I have a time machine.
And how does that work?
You're on the radio, Hardy.
I'm always on the radio.
I mean that interview you did about time travel.
Oh, they play that a lot.
Or maybe just once, and it seems like a lot. Man, it sure is lonely with Butchie gone.
Good morning.
Oh, there he is, not lonely anymore.
Yen's coming to my ceremony today, your services?
Oh, I almost forgot, of course.
I love coming to your church.
We don't call it a church. We call it a service station.
Sorry. I love coming to your service station.
It's my 3-year, 30,000-mile ceremony. It's a chance to live the past 3 years over again and fix anything that might need fixing.
Can you do that?
Sure. We read this thing and concentrate really hard, and that way we manipulate time and can atone for things we've done by actually changing the past.
That's interesting.
Also, you eat donuts.
Sounds delicious.
Covered with sweat.
Not so delicious.
It's symbolic sweat, not real sweat.
Oh, that's a little better, I guess.
What's the sweat represent?
It's fake sweat.
What's the fake sweat represent?
Real sweat.
Okay, I'll stop there.
You just show up and eat your donut and we'll be fine.
Will do, Butch.
I am on the bridge that crosses the current, and wonder of wonders, it isn't the water that runs under the bridge, but the bridge that moves the water.
Attention. Attention, everyone. I would like to welcome you all here today to my home. I hope you all enjoyed the opera, Sylvia Louise's The Dinner Party you are now attending.
It was lovely.
And now dinner will be served.
Tonight, we will be eating the courses slightly out of order. First, the appetizer, which is usually served last. It is corn.
I have heard of this. It is delicious.
Marco, do put your cigar away. Can't that wait until after dinner?
It's not a cigar. It's a wooden case for my personal steak knife.
We might not even be having steak.
It can be used for corn as well.
Attention. Apparently the entire staff has quit and taken the corn with them. Shall we retire to the drawing room?
Yes.
Roberta, please play us something on the piano. All right, I think it's time for everyone to go.
All right, let us go.
Good evening.
Look, Butchie, it's us on this mural.
The world is no more than a series of pictures painted on a wall. Attention, everyone. Thanks for coming to services. Shemp jive.
Shemp jive.
To begin, Please recite the unison reading provided in your program. Journey across the seven bridges. As I journey across the seven bridges, I shall go on my way as my desire takes me. If I shall cross one again or return the way I came, so be it. I am all and out of time. On this path I travel, seeking the cycle or seeking the whole map of the king's town. One populace forever dwelling within. Amen. And now let's sing the jingle. Everyone's talking about the new faith. Welcome, friends, to Butchie's 3-year or 30,000-mile tuning. Let's all support him as he travels through the years and decisions since he's been with us and corrects and adjusts them so that he might maintain a balance of peace and justice throughout eternity. Please take out your green crayon.
What do we do here, Hardy?
I think it's for free coloring.
Oh, no, we'll be coloring only the tree.
Oh, thank you, friend.
No problem. First-time visitors?
No, we've been here before, just not for a 3 or 30 ceremony.
Well, I'm glad that you could join us. Shemp jive.
Shemp jive.
Hey, Hardy, I really got to use the little boy's room.
I think it's okay if you just get up and go.
All right, I'll be back. I wonder where it is. Uh-oh, there's a sign that actually says little boy's room. Super gotta go.
Can I help you?
Is this the bathroom?
No, it's my room. What makes you think it's the bathroom?
Well, it says little boy's room.
And what do I look like?
A little boy.
And what does this place look like?
Your room?
Exactly.
Do you have a bathroom I could use?
Of course. Right through that door that says urination and defecation area.
Thanks. Whoa, sorry.
What are you doing here?
You're taking a bath.
Of course, it's the bathroom.
But the sign says urination and defecation area.
That's just an expression.
Well, I really have to urinate, man.
Right through that door.
Thanks. Hey, I'm outside.
Get down, you fool.
You mean like get down with my bad self? Or you mean like physically get down?
Get down.
Okay, I'll assume you mean hit the deck, judging from your tone.
Never stand up in the area.
What area?
The area.
Okay, I won't. What area?
How did you even get this far, a fool such as yourself?
I ask myself that all the time.
Well, don't move an inch.
I gotta tell you, I really have to pee, like super bad. Can I just go right here?
Not there. We have to test it.
Test it?
It could be a trap.
A pee trap?
You never know what dangers lurk here.
Okay. How do we test it? Because it's urgent.
Here. To be in the area, you have to have these.
What are they?
Steel nuts.
That would certainly help, I guess. What do I do with them?
Throw them in the direction you want to go, or in your case, the direction you want to go.
There. Nothing.
Then it's safe. Maybe.
Maybe, huh? I'm willing to risk it. So, tell me more about the area.
This is a forbidden place. A place of unspeakable dangers and mysteries. A place that might be the salvation of life or the source of its demise.
Fantastic. Sounds intriguing. But I have to get back.
Get back? You can't go anywhere.
I'll just go back the way I came.
That would be suicide.
No, that would be Butchie's service station. Nice meeting you, though.
Don't move an inch. The blue mud.
What blue mud?
It's right next to you. Or might be.
Okay.
You are in a place where mistakes might kill you. But it is also a place where only mistakes will save you.
Okay.
You see, if you try to do the same thing twice here, thinking you'll get the same result, you will probably be destroyed. So you have to do things differently And to do that, you have to make mistakes.
That's a metaphor for evolution.
It is?
Yes, but go on.
As long as you don't move, though, you are safe.
Well, I'd love to be safe and all, but I really must be going. Super nice to meet you, though.
Dorothy.
Dorothy. Well, good luck in the area.
Wait, don't.
Sorry I took so long, Hardy. What'd I miss? And why do you look like you're in the touring cast of The Wiz?
Oh, you missed the face painting ceremony.
Oh, nuts. It took me forever to find a place to go. Did I miss the sweat donuts?
No, not yet.
Sorry I did all that stuff before.
It never happened.
Sweet. Thanks for coming, everyone. There are donuts covered with sweat in the Dibble Education Hall. Please stay and join us for fellowship and the mixed blessing that is life, as represented by the sweat donuts. Shemp jive.
Shemp jive. Shemp jive. Shemp jive.
You're going nowhere. Can't you hear me? Slow down. There's nowhere to go. There's nowhere to go.
Excuse me, James.
Yes?
This is a lovely party, but I can't seem to leave.
What do you mean?
I mean, every time I try to leave, I can't seem to do it.
Oh, I know the problem. It's the door. It has to be open. Here. Oh, I feel absolutely foolish. Don't. I've made the same mistake before and ended up almost killing everyone at the party after days without food or water.
Well, thank you again for a lovely evening. We may be the ruling class, but frankly, I couldn't find my rectum without one of those rectum maps.
Cheers, Reggie. Come again.
The world is no more than a play of images superimposed on a wall.
That's why I believe there's no so-called free will. Everything stems from one source, which contains it all. This thing called time makes us see causes. Things don't cause things. They dwell next to each other in a landscape.
I was once trapped alone in a room. It was a very special room, though, because it granted wishes. So I said out loud, I am very lonely here in this room. I would like company. And then suddenly there appeared before me two other me's, two other Hardy Whites. Except it wasn't like company. It was like I was standing in front of a mirror, or rather the kind of mirror that you stand in front of when you're being fitted for a suit. And so I said, I would like the company here to look different from me. Because otherwise I just feel like I'm having my inseam measured. And then suddenly the faces of the two other me's transformed, and they were now strangers. And that felt much better, but we still had the same thought. So I asked, can these two other people think differently from me? And my wish was granted. So then I was in this room with two friends, and I didn't know what they were thinking all the time. I didn't know what was in their heads, and we got along very well for a while. But then it occurred to us we were trapped in this room, and we started to get anxious, and then we started to blame one another for our predicament, and then we became enemies, and we were fighting and all this. And then one of us, I think it was me, said, you know, this is ridiculous, because we're just the same person. We should, you know, mellow out here a little bit. We should cooperate. I'm not getting away with anything. You're not getting away with anything. And then everything was all right after that. No, it wasn't. And this room didn't exist, and I'm just telling a story. I'm sorry. I don't mean to lie to you. I'm just trying to entertain you. You have come over to my house. I've opened my door to you. You have walked through that door, and you have said, well, I'm not inside a house. I'm standing in a big field. I must apologize. I got my house very cheaply. You know how people buy land very cheaply because perhaps it floods? It's very low-lying. So I'm going to pick up this property for cheap. I'll just build my house on stilts. Well, I did that with this house. It's not the land that's the problem. It's not the space. It's time. My home exists in a weird place in time where it's hard to explain, but it's the time equivalent of swamp. And so sometimes you walk in and it's perfectly fine. Other times you walk in the house and it's not a house at all. You don't know where you are. You don't know where did I put the non-dairy creamer? I got a friend staying in my house for a while. I believe that that concept of renting your house out to strangers started in the 70s because I remember seeing a commercial where a fellow was in a house and he says, I'm in Tom's house and I see he left the non-dairy creamer. I assume he was invited. He could have been home invading. I'm going to invade this house and I'm going to go immediately to the cabinet and look through there for condiments and various things. Also, you could probably live on non-dairy creamer. It seems like something that you could subsist on, doesn't it? It would last forever. Some foods are immortal, I understand. There's some fast food sandwiches they've taken and put them in a glass case, and they never rot or deteriorate. And why is that? I've seen Play-Doh go bad. So it must be something that's, you know, more enduring than clay. Now, they say that humankind was made out of clay, that the god or gods formed some sort of clay they were making. I've seen the clay figures that children make, and that would be horrifying if they came to life. I'm sure they do in some sort of stop-motion claymation production. I've seen those, too, and they're very wonderful. They really tell us a lot about Zeno's paradox, you know, that stop-motion. Where's time? Is time just a bunch of broken up little motions and moments? Is it one flowing thing? What is it? Hardy, you seem to understand it. How could I possibly understand it? In it I am soaking. In which I am soaking in it. I'm sorry. I'm trying to get my grammar straight. I'm trying to learn all the time. I like to study and learn, and I know that I'm constantly forgetting, but learning and all is like working out. You can't just do some bicep curls and expect to, for eternity, have huge bulging biceps. You must do it on a regular basis because your biceps constantly deflate like a birthday balloon. You go and you say, I just got this filled with helium a year ago. What's wrong with it? It seems all floppy and everything. That's because the helium has leaked out of your biceps. And that's not what makes them bulge, I don't think. I think they swell up from lactic acid and the muscle breaks down and I don't really know what happens. I haven't read Muscle and Fitness for a long time. But I used to educate myself like that. I say, I'm gonna Joe Weider seems to have all the answers. So I'm gonna look at it. When his arms are crossed like that, his arms look huge, and that's because he was doing that trick that kids do where you puff out your biceps with your hands when they're underneath them. I learned all that I needed to know in elementary school. Then I promptly forgot it, relearned it in middle and high school, promptly forgot it, went to college, went to graduate school where they reteach you everything from elementary school in jargon, which is interesting. So I want to learn simple lessons, but in such a complicated way that I sound intelligent. And that's what's important. It's more important to sound like you know what you're talking about. And I do. Never doubt me, I'm so confident. If you ever betray the fact that you're not confident, people won't believe you, so you have to act like you know what you're talking about. Is that right, Hardy? It is if you want to fool people. And sometimes fooling people is important. Let's say you're a magician or a musician. Both of them are the same thing, really. People mix them up when they misspeak and everything. But really, it's very similar. You're sort of performing a sort of magic, fooling people, not in a bad way, not in a malicious way, but you're introducing mystery into their lives. How is that done? Every time that I've seen a symphony, I know that the trick is practice, but it is for magic too. You look at it and you think, how are they even doing that? How is that? I've picked up a violin before. It does not sound like that. How do they get that sound out of it? And I'm always delighted. And then the sum total of the parts is greater than the sum total of the parts, or whatever that expression is. The sum of the parts is greater than the individual one. I wish that words were came to me better, and better words came to me better. But I go to the microphone with the words I have. And a lot of times I like to have new ones, but I can't always remember them. Like I said, I read, and then I forget, and then I read more, and I'm trying to educate myself and have wonderful thoughts. Meditation is the same way. Sometimes I have wonderful insights about life, and then I promptly forget them. So I need to go back. I keep needed to go back to the well. You can't just go to the well one time and say, well, now we have water. You must return to that well all the time. Then you got to make sure the well is not contaminated, that something dead hasn't fallen into it. I know that happened with my tar pits. I had these tar pits, and animals just kept falling into them. Or maybe they were swamps. Animals fell into them, made them into a tar pit. Time. I don't know. Time. What was it? It was invented by... It didn't exist until the Chamber Brothers started hitting that cowbell. And there's, oh, you're quantifying it now. That's going to be disastrous. I've been on other planets where time is a little bit different because of mass and everything like that. What does that mean? But I can't explain it. Everything is literally over my head, but it's also under my head now that I know how the universe works. So that's good too. My head is always seemingly in the middle of things, because as you're perceiving things, it always seems like you're the center of everything, because you're the center of your own perception, right? You can't get out of your head and start looking at yourself unless you have an outer body experience, you die, and I'm floating above myself like that, but that's very rare, very rare. Most of the time, you look out into the universe and you are the center of it. I must be at the center of it, because look, I'm looking all around, it's all around me. I'm not over to the side. That's probably the source of a lot of our problems. Every time we go into one of these rooms where you get trapped and you can't leave and you're stuck there with other people, you think it's all about you. It's me who's trapped and surrounded by these other people. Or are they surrounded by me? Oh, my friends. Why do you call everybody your friends when you don't know him? Them. M, apostrophe E-M, them, know them. Because, I'll tell you why, because I want them to be my friends. The things I say are aspirational. The rules I follow are aspirational. They don't reflect the way I think that the world is. They reflect the way I want the world to be. I am under the impression that I am helping to create this reality, at least my own reality. I know that it is probably distorted and that my brain is an imperfect way of engaging this universe, but it's all I have. And I also have experienced things to the degree that I understand I would rather feel pleasure than pain. And I have also come to understand that I have created some of this pain. Some of it is outside of my control. Disease, disasters are outside of my control, but some of the pain I have made for myself. So I can control some of it, even though I know Butchie doesn't believe in free will. Maybe I don't either. But I know that I can try to be who I'm supposed to be, and I can try to make things feel right. Maybe that's just the only power we have. I don't know what's going on in the world. I would love to say I do. I would love to be some sort of wise man or authority. But I have no real wisdom. I have the wisdom of a child. You know, a child that says, stop fighting! Stop fighting! Love one another! Why are you yelling? See, a child knows. And then you just grow up and you find more sophisticated ways to say that. Or you become cynical and just let everybody fight. And you say, well, if I can't control it, then I'm going to destroy it. And you let anger and fear take over. Oh, it's so easy. I'm afraid of everything, too. I understand. I certainly understand. I feel the same way I did as a child. I just simply know more facts. I've seen more things. At least I think I have. As time has passed and unfolded, the other night I lay in my bed and I closed my eyes and I started to experience very vividly my great-grandmother's house. I toured through it. I walked through every room and I remembered so much of it. I think I was probably 6 years old the last time I was there, maybe a little older. Maybe I visited it after that. Let's say at the most 8 or 9. And yet, I remembered everything.
I can't remember what I had for breakfast 5 days ago. There are memories that have disappeared out of my head. From just a year ago, 2 years ago, a month ago. And yet, my great-grandmother's house, she died in 1977. So it's been at least that long. But I remember what was on her dresser in her room. I remember the color of her bathroom. I remembered how to get upstairs, where the bedrooms were, where my uncle's room was on the second floor at the front of the house, where he'd lie all night in bed with the TV on. Because he didn't like silence, because he could not bear silence. I remember all that, and it was very vivid to me, and it almost scared me because I temporarily became unmoored in time. It is as if the rope holding me to the dock had come unraveled, and I had started to drift out onto a sea of time, a sea of sameness, where I couldn't tell the past from the future. And I was once again a small child in that house, and I smelled the smells. I remembered everything. I remembered how differently my great-grandmother's neighborhood smelled from mine. I don't know why. Maybe it was older. It was an older house. I remember I lived in a newer house. She lived in a house, I believe, from the 1920s. And so I lived in a modern 1960s house. So there was a difference in the way it smelled. Sometimes in the kitchen, she had gas in her stove. She had gas as well, but her stove also had gas. Everybody in that house had gas, I suppose. It just happens when you get old, even with a house. But the stove had gas, so they put this odor in gas, you know, so you can smell it and everything. So that sort of sometimes stays around. Gas heat, gas stove, you can smell that. So that smell was mixed with the beautiful smells of the trees outside and the fresh air. I don't know if it still smells like that. The neighborhood might smell like garbage and exhaust for all I know. But at the time, it had very pleasant memories for me. Not everywhere I lived has pleasant memories. Some are tarnished with the pain that we made for ourselves in those houses, how we'd ruin it, how we'd throw our anger against the wall like it was ketchup. Or something, or garbage, and it sticks there, and it stains things, because you make that misery. Oh, how do I refinish my walls? Have you ever tried to get wallpaper off a wall? They say to use fabric softener. I did this. I sprayed the fabric softener on the wallpaper and began to scrape. And I imagined what it was like to put wallpaper on. I'd only seen it done like in I Love Lucy and Three Stooges and all. It's very difficult. You put the paste on it, and then the wallpaper gets stuck to Curly or something. You never quite get it on. It's just as hard to get it off. So I've done that. I've removed wallpaper. I've never put it on. I've never tried to get it on. Tried to get on something straight with no bubbles in it. Get it all beautiful, knowing that someday some fool's just going to scrape it off. I think about houses a lot, you know. Because different people live in them. You sell them. You can get attached to them when you're small. Say, this is our house. It's our house. We live here, my family. And then when you leave, you know, your memories stay in the house and you've sold it to someone else. And now you're not even allowed back into that house. But it's your house. Imagine it's that way with the forest. Let's say your people live near the woods. And you grow up in these woods, and then somebody says, these woods are now mine, you can't come in the woods anymore. And you say, but my memories are there. You have now trapped my memories in your so-called property. But that tree is my friend, and now you've imprisoned it. I can't even get to it anymore. Oh, we shut each other out from the things that give us life, that give us meaning. We cut each other off from our own memories. We do this to one another. Oh, the agony that we bring to one another. Why? The little child in me yells, why do we do it? People say to me, Hardy, you time travel. Yes, a little bit. I do a little bit. I dabble in time travel. Do you experience the same thing over and over? Can you change time? Are you different? No, it's the same thing over and over. Every time I time travel, the same thing happens. So you go back and you look at yourself? No, it's not the way it works. When I time travel, I am who I was at that time. Really? Really? But do you age or anything like that? Well, I can't tell you that. There's some weird particulars of it. I might be a little different from everybody else. I don't know. I don't know if you do this too. I imagine you do. I can't be the only one. There's nothing unique about me. I know that. I've compared myself to others. Oh, shudder. I don't like to do that because I always feel a little bit like maybe I've done something wrong or I'm not good enough. Sometimes when I compare myself to others, I feel pride. I feel superiority, and that's no good either. I don't like that either. That can't be right. And I just said either and either. Which is it? I don't know. It's either one. Either one. It's Aether One. That's Aether One. That is my favorite Lord of the Rings character, Aether One. They're all so good, right? They're all good and noble, except for the ones who aren't. I've decided that I don't like stories that have a universe, that I don't like stories where all the characters, their histories are explained, their genealogy are explained. That's just not the way it is in life. When I encounter a situation or I see a story unfold, I have no idea who the parents of that person doing the action are. I don't know where they came from. I don't know the history of their people. I don't know if they had caves full of gold or battled dragons or anything like that. I don't know if they come from a race of people whose feet have a certain lack or of hair or excessive hair or something like that. And it doesn't bother me one bit because telling me those things doesn't enlighten me at all. You say, well, you know, my grandparents were Swedish. Very good. I don't know. What does that mean? They had like red gummy fish laying around or something? That doesn't mean anything to me. I see you. The circumstances of your birth don't enlighten me necessarily. So I don't really like to read fiction, at least, where I know everything, because it seems that's the least real way of telling a story. Stories often exist surrounded by mystery, surrounded by nothingness. Oh, nothing. There's nothing scary. Have you seen nothing? I have seen. Have you seen nothing? Do you know nothing? I've been told I know nothing, and I'm going to embrace that. Hardy White knows nothing. Oh, thank you. I'm going to take that as a compliment. To me, nothing is the canvas on which that all of existence is painted out like a beautiful mural projected on a white wall with the imagination. Does it have any substance? Or is it just a projection of the mind on this white wall? Is it all just laid out on nothingness like that? Is there nothing underneath it? Yes. What? Is there nothing there underneath it? Yes. I don't know. Your language is confusing me. You buy a canvas. There's nothing on the canvas.
There's gesso. Some kind of, usually it's been primed.
Okay. That's true. But for the sake of discussion, there's nothing there until you put it there. A lot of times I just like staring at a white page and imagining what's there. One time I remember this happened very vividly. I was sitting in my room and preparing to draw. And I looked at a white page. And on this white page, I suddenly saw an image. And so I began to trace the image that I saw. And the image was my grandmother sitting up in bed as she did every night writing letters. Every night she would get into bed, I don't know, about 10 o'clock. And she would sit there for a few hours, sipping a beer in a thermal cup. Because years ago she had been in a traffic accident and the doctor said it might help you to sleep if you have a little beer before bed. And she took that to mean have a little beer before bed every single night of your life until you die. So she would sit there with that plastic turquoise thermal cup with a white rim filled with Ballantine beer. and she would write letters, thank you notes. She also wrote thank you notes for thank you notes. If you'd write her a thank you note, she'd say thank you for your sweet thank you note. She loved to correspond, and she had very ornate, elaborate, beautiful script handwriting, which she had learned in school, the kind they don't teach anymore. And she would sit up in bed like that with her bouffant, with her dyed black bouffant that she'd go to the hairdressers like once a week or something and get her hair set and then never touch it again. Sit there in her nightgown, the covers pulled up to her lap, a pillow on her lap, a board on the pillow, a paper on the board, and the pen on the paper. And she'd write those letters. And I saw that so vividly. And the angle was me standing there, sort of at the foot of her bed, looking at her from an angle to the side and the foot of her bed, as I did when I would walk in the door of her room. And so I drew it. And the drawing looks like I'm tracing it, because I am. I'm tracing an image that was projected on that paper. And I kept that drawing for years, because a couple days after that, I got a terrible phone call that my grandmother, who I didn't live with anymore, I had moved out, she now lived alone, she had had a stroke and fallen in her house, and she wasn't found for days, 2 days later, and they found her alive, but in a terrible, terrible state. Imagine laying there for days, unable to move. And a cousin just coincidentally was in town to visit her, so nobody would have found her if this cousin hadn't have been there. And they called me and they said, we found your grandmother, you must come to town now. So I got in a car and had to drive for hours. It was terrifying. But then I remembered that vision I had had. I'd seen her. I'd seen her so clearly like that, in my mind. I wonder what was going on. Is it a coincidence? Coincidences are wonderful, wonderful things. Sometimes they're terrifying things. To be able to see the future, do we, any of us, want that? Do you really want to see what's going to happen? Do you really see what has already happened? Can you keep any of that in your mind, or are we so paralyzed by fear that it affects our vision? If we had no fear, we could see perfectly into the future, maybe. It would not make us afraid, so we would not shut our eyes, the eyes of our mind, to it. And we could see it. We could look at the mural of our lives, the mural of all existence laid out there. Did you ever see one of those murals, like at a Capitol building or something in a state, and here is the history of the state, and over on the left-hand side they will have people, Europeans, oppressing native people, and then they'll have some animals or something like that, and then they'll have industry people in waistcoats making industry, and then, you know, modern people over here doing stuff with flying cars, and it'll be all laid out there like a mural with the people right in there. You can see that. Imagine that life is like that. Are those things causing one another? Or are they just next to one another? Time. Try to ask what time is sometimes. It's very confusing. Is it ever the time to ask about time? Don't talk about it anymore. There's a reason that we always talk about it and are fascinated by it. We know that something's going on. We keep looking the other way. Funny that we don't get any closer to the answers, isn't it? Isn't it funny? Isn't it funny that the closer we get to truth sometimes, the more we dial it back? Say, well, we go through dark ages sometimes. People move close to that light, and something happens. And they turn away, and they start marching backward. I think it's going on right now. I think we're going to march back into the past because it feels comfortable there. I want to be a child again. But when you march back into the past, you march back into ignorance. You cut off some of the mural, so you're living in a one tiny little part of it. You don't see the big picture anymore, and you doom yourself to repeat
the same things over and over again. Why? Look forward. Open your eyes. The only thing that can happen to you is oblivion. The only thing that can possibly happen to you is you will be completely annihilated and disappear. Imagine that. Is that so terrible? Also pain. Yes, also pain. Sorry about that. That's real. That's real. There's no magic answer, is there? There's no way to make it all better. I don't know of any way. All I know is that other people hold my hand. When I'm afraid, I know you don't have the answers. If I was laying there sick or injured, all I'd want is my hand held. Just let me know you're there with me. I know you might not have the answer. You might not have the cure. Please don't leave me alone. That's all I want. If I'm alone, trapped in this room, I really do only have one wish, and that is that I not be alone. Please be with me. Please show me kindness. Please let me know that you know that we're the same. That's all I want. I look at you and I see myself. You look at me and we see yourself. You see our so well self as well. You know what I'm getting at. You know, if you were at a bar in Star Wars and you walked in that bar that had all the alien people and everything, and you looked around and you saw a human being, you'd say, "Oh, a human being." That's the way you do. Americans do that when they travel abroad. It's an American. Now, you may have nothing in common with that other American, that other human being, but there's something that's sameness. You see yourself. So I will feel comfortable there. That person will understand me. I speak English. They speak English. I speak human. They speak human. They have human feelings and understanding. They will know what I'm going through. They will be able to give me comfort. They will complete me in a way I will feel less afraid. If they're with me, I feel less afraid with you, my friend. My friend. It's hard to sing when I got it, but I also have to burp. I got to admit that. I'm glad I'm not in a choir because I'm sort of belchy. What is that? I don't know, my stomach. Perfect. The body is imperfect. I don't want to live forever because I'm afraid of this body. I know it's not going to hold up. I know it's a jalopy. And I'm just, basically, it's holding together long enough to get me where I'm going. Where are you going? No idea. Interesting, right? I want the car to hold on, hold together, and to run just far enough to get me to my destination. But I don't know what that is. I don't know what my destination is. I don't know where I'm going. And I don't know if getting there is the most important thing. I have more fun with you in the car with me. It'd be nice if you were driving, because I'm so lazy and I like to nap. But it could be, you could be passenger, it doesn't matter. But it's the car full of people that's the blast, not the getting there. Sometimes that's a letdown. So it's the trip, right? It's the trip. Oh, I'm glad you're with me now on the radio, or maybe not the radio, but you're listening to it some other way. There's some way that you're experiencing the things I'm saying to you. It's like we're friends. It's like we're together. Oh, I don't want to do you harm. I'm not competing with you in any way. I think what you do is wonderful. I'm happy for you, genuinely. Sometimes I'm mad. Sometimes you make me mad, too. I got to admit. Sometimes I get my feelings hurt. And when I get my feelings hurt, I lash out. I wish I didn't. I wish I was... wish I was more patient. I think I am. And then something... the minute I say, oh, I'm a very patient person, I get tested almost instantaneously. There must be something going on that we don't see in the universe. I don't know if that happens to you, but the minute I get puffed up, maybe it's I have some kind of warranty or something, I immediately get deflated again. It's a wonderful sort of deflation, though. I'm not angry at it. I like it. Because when I get too puffed up, my skin is too taut. Flout? Flaunt. Flout? Forget it. Chomp? Champ? I barely speak this language, apparently. I've noticed that. I always think I do.
Do you speak English fluently? I'm told no, which is sad because I don't speak any other languages. People who do, it's magic to me. I wish I could. I've studied a little bit, you know, and I can say one or two things in other languages, but that's about it. I'm not even going to demonstrate because it's so embarrassing because I'm sure my accent is wrong and everything. I try to speak human, you know, but even that, you know, facial expressions sometimes are dependent on culture, you know. Not everybody smiles at people. You know, not everybody makes certain eye movements or anything to convey things to others. I'm hoping that we speak a similar enough language that I can get some things through to you. And I'm not trying to change you. I'm just trying to let you know the things that I feel so that maybe it would help you. Why do you want to help? I feel like if I help you, I help me. I feel like to get rid of pain, to get rid of suffering, we got to do it together. You got to agree to do it too. And I think it can be done. You know, so much of it we do to ourselves. So much of it we put out there and we think, well, everybody's responsible for their own actions. Yes, but they're soaking in a sea of ideas. And we contribute ideas into that. And some of those ideas are horrid. And sometimes we do make people feel bad about themselves on purpose. And sometimes in such a concerted way that we make whole groups of people feel bad on purpose. Sometimes we terrorize others on purpose because we are fearful or angry. Maybe they're the same thing. And I would say this, that, you know, you can't poke a dog and then say the dog's responsible for its behavior. We're in this together. You know? If you pee in the pool, then the pool has pee in it. You understand? Doesn't stop being your problem. Then we're all in the same pee pool. That's why they call us pee pool. It really is. That's the origin of the word. We are people because we are in a pool of pee. I know it's unpleasant to think about. Oh, the human body, it's so full of faults. It's a big bag of guts. Ew. People are a bag of guts, smelly and sticky. Everything is messy. Everything on the outside's dead. Head hair, body hairs, tail. Well, if you have a tail. Head hair, body hair. Nails, teeth, skin, all dead, all dead. All the dreams we had, all dead. Like that. And Queen knew that. But it is. Everything on the outside's dead. All the things we think are beautiful are fading. Oh, the real beauty is transcendent. The real beauty is in the mind and the imagination. That's where the real beauty lies, my friends. I imagine a world where there is love and hope. I imagine a world where we all fight suffering together. I imagine a world where we understand that we are one, that we understand that we need one another, that we are related, that we are a family, not just of man, but of creatures, that life itself is a family and connected and trapped in this universe, this fragmented universe of time and consequence. That even on a cosmic scale, not just biologically, but on a cosmic scale, there is a sort of unity. Can you imagine that? It's exciting to think about. Let your imagination soar. Go all those places with me. If you had wings, like that ride used to be at World, and you can go all those places in your mind. Oh, my friends, it's so wonderful to be with you. You know what I'm going to do before? I forgot, I got a lot of time left, but I do, we had the October fundraiser WFMU did last month. It's not October anymore. But I did get a chance to thank everybody because it's not October anymore. And I have to thank people. And why do we have to thank them? I have to thank them because they've let me know that we've made a connection. And it makes me want to weep my brains out because I see what people say. And when people have said to me that I've connected with them or that we're friends or something like that, I find that so amazing. That's what I want. That's my fondest wish. That's me. Me trapped alone in a room is the radio. And to know that you're out there thinking different things and yet we recognize our sameness is a beautiful thing to me. That I can feel sad when you're sad and feel happy when you're happy and you're going to do the same for me makes this life worth living. So let me just, I won't just say your first names if that's okay. Maybe you'll recognize yourself. I'm not going to say much more than that because some people give a little, some people give a lot, but everybody gives a lot. You know what I'm saying? Does that make any sense? So I just want to thank you. I'm going to concentrate on your name as I say it. Tim, thank you. Eleanor, thank you. Charles, thank you. Christopher, thank you. Mike, thank you. Paul, thank you. Connor, thank you. Michael, thank you. Tyler, thank you. Joe, thank you. Christopher, thank you. Stephen, thank you. Mark, thank you. Greg, thank you. Brandon, thank you. Anna, thank you. Joseph, thank you. Jeff, thank you so much. And what does thanks mean? Thanks means that I recognize your sacrifice. I recognize the thing that you have done and that it moves me and that I feel that I need to tell you that I appreciate it, a lot of people just want acknowledgement, like if they're sad too, you know, somebody says, I'm depressed. Sometimes some people think that means, you know, solve my problems for me or give me a solution. And they'll start saying all these things. Well, you should have huckleberry tea. A lot of times, all people really want is that you acknowledge them, what they're going through. That's all. That you recognize it and you understand it. They don't expect you to solve it. They don't expect you to provide solutions or do something for them. They just want you to say, I know you're suffering. Or, I know that you have tried to help. That's all. You know? So, that's what I tried to do. I try not to go on the radio and give you some sort of answers or solution. All I try to do is acknowledge you. That you exist. That you're living a life. That you might be struggling. That you might have fear. Sometimes you have unbelievable joy, I bet. I acknowledge that too. I acknowledge that you're trying, even though sometimes it seems like you're not getting very far. I acknowledge that too. I understand. Oh, that's what it means to be friends. It means I see you. Me too. Come here, stand by me. Come on. I mean, you know, even if you're not a physical hugger, it's so great that we can do the virtual one. We don't have to touch or anything if that makes you uncomfortable. We can just like put our minds together and say, I know, I recognize you're another human being over there. It brings me such joy. Friends, my name is Hardy White, and this show is called Miracle Nutrition, and it's on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in New York City in Rockland County. How about that? That's exciting. And online, everywhere in the world, WFMU.org. So please join me each week at this time. Also, the full archive, every show I've ever done. And I just like to give you a hint, though. It's all one show. I just keep going back in time and doing it over and over again. And it's like looking at a crystal just from different angles. It's different facets of the same thing. One show, one room, many doors. Thank you for being with me, and I'll see you again next week.